We are going to talk today about Miriam as the second of the prophetesses, and that doesn't mean that there weren't other prophetesses besides, that is skipping, let's call it, from Sarah to Miriam. There may have been others in between. Just for example, it talks about many things, and you may have heard in the Medrash that that Leah knew this, or things like that. But when it comes to, as we said in the beginning, those prophecies which were necessary or important for the future, for all times, were the ones that were written down. And therefore, if it was not, the person may have been a prophet and may have received prophecy, or the prophets about whom we are talking about, men or women, may have had more prophecies than what we find in various places, but those prophecies which were necessary for all times in the future are the ones that were written down. So now, I want to ask you the following question, and that is, where the prophecy of Miriam, where is the first mention of the prophecy of Miriam?
Did you talk to her father about not...
Did you get up to that sentence yet?
I haven't gotten to that point yet. But,
15 in ours.
What?
It's 15 in ours, I think.
Chapter and verse?
Chapter 15, verse...
I'm still on that one.
Not chapter 15.
In Shmos, okay.
Shmos chapter 1, pasuk 15. So Sharon, you said that pasuk. Please read that.
Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses, but Moses fled from the face
That's chapter 2, I think.
I was on the wrong one. And the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of one was Shifra, and the name of the other Pua. And he said, when you do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women, you shall look upon the birth stool. If it be a son, then you shall kill him. If it be a daughter, they shall live. The midwives feared God, not as the king of Egypt commanded.
So, one sec. Is that the sentence that you were talking about, that you mean to say?
I thought so, because isn't she referred to as Shifra or Pua, Miriam?
Okay, so just let's all get on the same sentence, okay? What sentence are you talking about?
Again, chapter 1, pasuk 15, but we're in the stone edition.
No. That's okay. the same thing that you said. Chapter 1,
yeah.
Pasuk 15 is right. The same in all books.
Oh, fine. Okay, yeah.
That's going to be the unifying factor, okay? That's
going to
be
no matter what book.
Okay, no matter what book.
No matter what edition, yeah.
Okay, so let me just... You all have the sentence? Yeah. I have a little bit of a different translation. The king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, whose names were Shifra and Pua. So, and you're telling me... You're not personally responsible for it. You're telling me that that's the first mention of Miriam.
To my understanding.
Okay. So give me but you mentioned a different idea.
I was thinking the first time that Miriam was thought of as a prophet.
Uh huh.
I guess more midrashic than it is. I don't think it's listed. It's written here, where she tells her father.
Tell the father, the whole story, we'll come back there. So let's look at the beginning of chapter 2. A man of the house of Levi went and married Levi's daughter. The woman became pregnant and had a son. She realized how extraordinary the child was, and she kept him hidden for 3 months. When she could no longer hide him, she took a papyrus box. So that's, forgive me, my translation over here. It says papyrus box for whatever that is, coating it with asphalt and pitch. I'm sure you have different translation except for the pitch. And she placed the child in it. She placed the rushes near the bank of the Nile. The child's sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. And you are now telling me, Sharon,
that Miriam had said to her father before Moshe was born that his plan to separate, because he had separated from his wife at one point, and she was saying that having all the wives being separated from their husbands was going to do more than what Pharaoh was decreeing, and therefore they got back together again, but
okay, let me just tell the story, basically. No, I'm not going to tell the story. Because we'll leave it the way you said it now.
Okay.
And she convinced them to get back together.
Right.
And then she is responsible because she so-called caused this child. So she goes out to the banks of the river to see what would happen to him. Right? So she goes out there, and then the whole story afterwards, and the Pharaoh's daughter comes by, etc., etc. So I'm going to start off with you, and that is, you told me that Pua was her, and you told me that she's over here. Mm-hmm. And the one question I'm going to ask you is, it doesn't have her name mm-hmm. here. Miriam is not mentioned by name here. As a matter of fact, not only is Miriam not mentioned by name, but the parents are not mentioned by name over here. It says a man of the house of Levi and a woman from the house of Levi, or Levi's daughter. In other words, there's no mention of the names over here. So that's an obvious question that we have to answer. Why are there no names given for anyone over here? Besides which, of this Pua over here, what kind of name is that? What does it mean, etc., etc.? And I ask you about the prophecy, mm-hmm. or that miraculous event of Miriam, and so you went right over to here.
Mm-hmm.
I want to read you now from Pirkei Avos. This is Ethics of the Fathers, Chapter 5, and it says over there, Chapter 5 is all composed of by numbers. That is, things are given the order of numbers there. So the first Mishnah says that the world was created with 10 statements of God. Then it says there were 10 generations from Noah to Abraham. First 10 generations from Adam to Noah, then there were 10 generations from Noah to Abraham, then Abraham was tested with 10 tests, and then there were 10 miracles done for our ancestors in Egypt, and 10 on the banks of the Red Sea. Then there were 10 tests which our ancestors tested God, and then it says there were 10 miracles that took place in the temple. And then it says there were 10 things. By the way, before I do this, how can we have all these tens together? And right after this, it starts going off with there are 7 things that happen with an uncultivated person, and there's 7 these and 7 these. And then it comes over, there are 4 times that the world is judged, and there are 4 characteristics that people have. And then it says there are 4 characteristics of students. So there's the Mishnah, a whole bunch of series of things here, a whole bunch of tens and a whole bunch of sevens and a whole bunch of fours. So why is that? Just for a moment. The Mishnah was studied by heart. So what is the best way to remember things? By putting it into categories. So you have the tens all together, and then you have all of the sevens together, and then you have all of the fours together, because then you know you only have to remember what are the 10. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, when it says that Avraham was tested with 10 tests, I mentioned this past Shabbos that the Torah doesn't tell us which ones are tests except for the Akedah bringing up Yitzchak for potential the sacrifice. That one is clear. The others, it doesn't say this is a test. And in the end of the art scroll Chumash on this week's parsha that we're going to read on Shabbos, it has three different lists as to what are the 10 tests. Because there are different opinions as to what they are. Okay, so now I skipped one of the 10. And this 10 says that there were 10 things that were created on Erev Shabbos, Bein Hashmoshos, on the first week of creation. God made 10 things at the time of Bein Hashmoshos. Bein Hashmoshos is between the two suns, so-called. That is, Friday afternoon, so every afternoon, there's a time period between sunset and nightfall. Whether, and which day does it belong to? Is it the previous day or is it the next day? So it is both. And there's a one moment within that time that it changes from one day to the next. When is that moment? We don't know. And therefore, we keep that whole time as both one day and the next day also. So therefore, when it comes to lighting candles, for example, on Friday night, we light candles before sunset. Yes, I know we add 18 minutes, but before sunset, because sometime after that is the exact moment that Shabbos starts. And when we end Shabbos, we don't end Shabbos at sunset, we end it when the stars come out, that is, at the end of that time period, because that time period, therefore, is on both sides. So when people say we keep Shabbos for 24 hours, it's not correct. We keep Shabbos for 25 hours, because we start it... that is, women keep Shabbos for 25 hours. Men, not... Because if a woman lights candles 18 minutes before sundown, and you keep Shabbos 42 minutes after sundown, so the 18 and the 42 is an hour, so it's really 25. But just as what happens if I'm late and I didn't get a chance to light before, you know, this time that it always says for candle lighting. So there is time you can light, you should light till sunset, in case you get stuck. Okay, now, what are the things that are listed that were created at that time? There is one, the mouth of the earth, through which Korach, when he had his rebellion, that he fell. Upi ha-be'er, and the mouth of the well. We'll come back to it. The mouth of the donkey. That's the donkey that spoke with Bilam. The keshes, the rainbow. The haman, manna. The hamateh, and the staff. The hashamir. The shamir was a miraculous type of little insect that would be able to cut solid rock or marble or the jewels for the breastplate of the Kohen to engrave the names, Haksav HaMichtav HaLuchos, the writing, script, inscription, and the tablets. Long explanation for that, we'll say. One of the things that was created, Erev Shabbos, Bein Hashmoshos, was the well
of Miriam.
So in other words, when we speak about Miriam and what she does and her prophecy and the effect of Miriam, when is Miriam around? Or when does it start? It doesn't start just at that time in Egypt. That the whole concept of Miriam, the whole idea of Miriam, not necessarily prophecy, that's not prophecy, but if you'll call it the effect of Miriam, is already there in the world when Erev Shabbos, Friday afternoon, Bein Hashmoshos, between the two times. So what is that time period? Is it the week of creation, or is it not the week of creation? So the good, yeah. So that's the answer. The answer is it's both. In other words, it's part of the supernatural, and it's part of the natural. And because that time period is the time period, it's no longer the supernatural. In other words, God creates the world, and the world runs. It's true that without God's constant attention and creation, as we call, the world would not exist. But it's at that time period, which is now going into the natural world. But it's a miraculous creation. Let's see now. So we have Miriam, Be'er, the well before the beginnings of the world, at a time period which is part of the supernatural and the natural. Now, we had mentioned before, we did not mention, this was on Sarah, the part that we didn't talk about that maybe we'll come to. There's a concept of Ma'aseh Avos Siman Labanim. That which happens with the ancestors is as a siman, as a sign for the children. Forgive me, I said I'm not talking about Sarah. This week's Parsha, they go to Egypt. And when they, right, as soon as they come into the land of Israel, they go to Egypt. Why? Because there's a famine in the land. God says, I'm going to give you this land, and it's a wonderful place. You'll become famous, you'll become great, you'll have children, you'll have all of these wonderful things happening. And as soon as they come into the land, famine. So that's one of the tests that everybody agrees on. So let me just ask you a question. Why did Abraham leave the land of Israel? And now they come into Egypt, and the first thing Abraham says is, oh, Sarah, could you please do me a favor? Would you please lie? Would you please say that you're my sister? Something seemed wrong about this for a number of reasons. Number one, you may say number two, but number one, why did he leave the land of Israel? God said that he would be successful in everything there, and now there's a challenge. So what does he do? He says, okay, forget Israel. They come to Egypt, and what does he do? He says, righteous woman, prophetess, named Yiska, all of those wonderful things that we talked about before. Could you please lie about who you are? So, the Ramban, Nachmanides, says that Abraham did wrong. He sinned. And the Torah tells us when the ancestors sinned also. You're not supposed to lie. And therefore, he lied, it was wrong. And as a punishment for that, the descendants of Abraham have to go into Egypt. To the place where the sin was done in Egypt, that's where they have to go to make up for it and the years that was there. However, that's the opinion of the Ramban. The Maharal asks a number of questions on that. He said, because it does say in the Torah that Avram is told that you should know that your children will be strangers in a land that is not theirs. But it doesn't say it over here. It doesn't say it till when God appears to Abraham later in the Parsha we're going to do the Shabbos, and God gives him various promises, and Abraham says, how do I know I'll get the land? There, God says, your descendants will be strangers in a land that's not theirs. I'm sorry, it was last week's Parsha, not this coming week's Parsha. In other words, it doesn't say it at the time that they go to Egypt or anything like that. It says it, so they say, how can he say that it's as a result of the sin? But his answer is that when we live in this world, we cannot rely on miracles, on supernatural things. We can pray for miracles, we can do that, but we can't rely on it. And we have to act in a natural manner. And therefore, if there's a famine in the land and there's no food over there, what do you have to do? Get food. If there's food in Egypt, so go to Egypt and get the food that's over there. The test is, how do you look at this taking place over here? Does it make you lose your faith in God and His promise, etc., etc.? And you say, well, God said it was going to be good and it's terrible, and therefore forget all of God's promises. Or you say, God has His reasons. I don't know what they are. And if so, then you have to do the normal things to protect your life in every single way. The fact that Abraham says, this is my sister, is not the only time that it takes place in the Torah. Mm-hmm. When Abraham himself does this, when he goes to the land of the Philistines, the exact same thing happens over there. And everybody assumes that this is brother and sister rather than husband and wife. And it happens with Yitzchak also. So Avram was a good teacher, right? What was he teaching? What is it that's here? In other words, you have to learn how to exist in difficult situations, and you can't rely on miracles, and you have to do whatever is necessary. So Avram says, she's really my sister because she is the daughter of my father, or my mother, my this, like that. You'll see in the Torah it says all of that, and you'll say, that sounds like a bunch of excuses. Okay. Fine, but you have to do whatever is necessary. That is the maral. And others say that you have to do whatever is necessary in every situation. If so, part of the reason of the Jews going to Egypt, when Avram goes down to Egypt, is that he's in a sense paving the way for the Jewish people that will be in Egypt many years later. Because this event that's taking place has its supernatural type of aspects to it and its natural types of aspects to it. So there's always a combination between the two with the ancestors and with Miriam also. Oh, if so, now let's take it to Miriam with this well. But before we do that, one more thing from this week's Parsha that we will read. Avraham has just had his bris milah, his circumcision. And all of a sudden he takes a look and he sees that there are some travelers coming by. And Avram says, basically, God appears to Abraham. And then it says he looks and he sees these people coming by. And he says, the word in Hebrew is Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, which is the name of God. But it also means my masters. And he says, don't go away. There are two explanations. Who is Avram speaking to when he says that? Is he speaking to the three people? And he says to them, don't go away. Come into my house. Or is he speaking to God? And he says, God, don't go away. I'm sorry, it's very nice to talk to you. However, there are some people over here that I need to help. And therefore, God, wait a moment. So according to this second explanation, there are obviously a lot of questions over here. One question is, you're in the middle of talking to God and you say, God, excuse me, I have something more important to do. So that's the answer, yes, because Kabbalah's Orchim, Hachnasa's Orchim, bringing the strangers into your house is greater than the revelation of God, and therefore he has to stop. We had a group here this week who came in on Sunday morning. And so the person who was there said, how did Avraham notice altogether that there were people going by? The halacha is when you're davening Shemoneh Esrei, you're supposed to keep your eyes closed if you know it by heart, or you're supposed to look in your sitter. You're not supposed to look all around. How did he even know that there were people coming by at this time? You're not supposed to know any of this. You're supposed to be concentrating on what you're doing. You may have heard him, or if you want to be entertained, so listen, you know, do a Google search for Rabbi David Orlovsky. And Rabbi Orlovsky talks in Israel a lot to schools, and he describes the difference between boys and girls davening when they're davening Shemoneh Esrei. So he says, when girls daven, they daven like this. They, in other words, they look in their sitter and they concentrate very much. And when boys daven, he says, they daven like this. Like that. Now, you're supposed to daven. You don't have to put the sitter like this in your face, but you're supposed to concentrate on what's in the sitter. You're not supposed to be going like this all the time and looking all around. And, you know, you want to make all the motions with your hand and everything like that. Okay, that's your business. But you're not supposed to see what's going around. You're supposed to be concentrating on what you're doing. So how did Avraham see these people coming by if he's in the middle of talking to God? So his answer was that a person is supposed to be spiritual and supposed to be associated But if they're supposed to be sensitive to another person's needs, even when they're in the middle of a spiritual thing. So if their people are coming by, like he's attuned, his antenna are up for something like that, and therefore he says, God, wait a minute. Okay, fine. What does he say? Come into the house, washes their feet first, comes into the house, and he says, have a little bit of bread. A couple morsels. And what does he give them?
A full meal.
A feast. And he gives them, for those, according to the Medrash, he gives them tongue with mustard.
Mustard.
Rashi says? Yep. And because it, you know, tastes good. And he says, let some water be brought and for them to have, and they should have some bread. The Gemara says that the, let's say the bread is like the man in future generations, the manna, and the water is like the well that the Jewish people had in the wilderness throughout the time they were there. That it came as a result of Abraham. But what are we, when we were just talking, what did we talk about the well? We call it Miriam's well. And why water? What's Miriam and water?
Well, she, children in the water.
She watched Moshe when he was In the river, going the, towards
right. That's Miriam in the water. So the fact that she stayed by the water, in it says that the water came as a result of Miriam in the wilderness. And as a matter of fact, part of the reason is that there were three leaders of the Jewish people in the wilderness: Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. And in the merit of each one of those three, we had one of the three blessings that we were given in the wilderness. So in the merit of, we'll start off with Miriam, we had water. In the merit of Aaron, we had the clouds of glory that traveled with us. And in the merit of Moshe, we had the man, the manna. Those three things came as a result of them. And in the Torah, it says, I'm going to say it in short fashion, it says Miriam dies, and they had no water, and they complained for water. And Aaron dies, and we were attacked by one of the people. And Moshe dies, and the man stops. That's not in the Torah, but that because Moshe dies, let's call it the last day of the Torah, so-called. And in the book of Joshua, the man stops. So we have these three leaders of the Jewish people, and we have the three gifts that come, one for each of them. So this contradicts what I said before. Right? I said that the water came because of Abraham. And now I'm telling you that the water came because of Miriam. So the explanation that is given is that, if we'll call it in general, the merit of the water came because of that which Abraham did. And the specifics of it coming for the Jewish people and remaining for all the years in the wilderness came because of Miriam. Another explanation that is given is, it came because of Abraham, merit that what? That there was a Miriam many years later. In other words, Abraham's merit made it that there was a Moshe, Aaron, and a Miriam afterwards. That's how all of this came about. Okay. No mention of the name of the parents. Just says a man from the house of Levi and a woman from the house of the Levi, and there's this sister over there. And so, of course, our question is that why none of them, no names are mentioned over here? Do you have any ideas, any thoughts why?
Well,
So take a look. Give yourselves a moment to think. That's
makes him sound very ordinary.
Unless it doesn't matter. I'm just thinking of him as a name.
Is this where it says a good beach child? Is this where the expression came in about, you know, he's a good baby, meaning he doesn't cry?
If you read the explanation at the bottom of the page.
What does it say in your bottom of the page?
It's saying, explain what a goodly child is. It says, not betraying his presence by crying, said if she could hide him for a space of 3 months.
He was born the 6 month. He was born 6 months, 3 months early. That's why I didn't know he was due, that she could hide him for 3 months without a problem. But afterwards, she had to send him out. So I wasn't as well.
Okay, any thoughts?
I mean, still very little, but.
No mention of anybody's name over here.
No, there's a purpose, but I'm trying to understand what, because this happens other times in the Torah where they don't say the names either, and it gets so confusing, but there's a reason. Maybe it has something to do with different roles, meaning like,
so
she served different roles within the Jewish people. Like, she was a leader, but she also was a midwife. She had, like, many different, like, you know, your Hebrew name, and that's, like, your purpose. So, like, she had different roles in Jewish people. You know what I mean? So you're not tied to one name.
Like, so you mentioned that. It's a very, very interesting thing, right? She's a midwife. What does the midwife do?
She, for the baby?
She brings the child into the world. Where else do we know of Miriam in the Torah? So far we don't have Miriam by name, right? So where do we have Miriam by name? Let me see, I'll try and use the same chumash as at least many of you. Her name isn't there either. It's still only the sister of the sister is the only one that's mentioned over there.
It's not like Lashon Hara time.
No, before Lashon Hara time. Though it's in chapter 15 of Shmos of Exodus, and it is Pasuk 20. It's page 273 for most of you. Not here. Let me give you this one. Pasuk 20. Of course, there's no 20. It's Pasuk Chav here. Page 273.
What did you say is paragraph?
I didn't say. Paragraph 15. Pasuk 20.
Really? That late? Wow. I didn't realize. All the way to the...
Wow, where he crossed the Red Sea. Unbelievable. Yeah. That's the first time her name is mentioned.
I believe so.
Actually...
No.
No, I'm looking here.
It says in the list of the genealogy.
In the list of genealogy, when they're discussing Korah.
Yeah. Well, the Korach is afterwards.
Oh, Korach is afterwards.
Well, no, no, there is...
In Vayera.
Yeah, in the genealogy she is mentioned. But in other words, it just talks about her being born, etc., part of the family. Here it tells us something. What does it say?
No, it doesn't list Miriam here.
It does not.
Miriam showed him Yocheved as his father's sister, the wife. She bore him Aaron and Moses.
Okay.
It doesn't mention Miriam.
So I stay with what I said.
Yeah.
Okay. But what does it tell us about Miriam here?
About water.
Huh? No, forget water, but what's she doing?
No.
Hey, it is water. Yes, it is water. They just crossed the Red Sea. They're just after the water.
She was leading on her own merit, not because she was a sister to Moshe.
What is she doing? She's leading the women. In what?
Singing praise.
In praise of God. Now, let me just... And what does it say the women do? What does she take?
Tambourine.
Let me ask you a question. Now, you don't tell me about Negro spirituals, but where are all these musical instruments?
So they brought them with them.
They brought them with them. Mm-hmm. In other words, what was taking place was that they were told that they were going to go out, and they prepared musical instruments. What is Miriam doing with the people, the women over here? She's helping create the Jewish nation. That's what's happening over here. What does the midwife do?
Helps create the Jewish nation.
Helps create the Jewish nation. In other words, when you said about the function of Miriam being a continuing type of thing, yes, yes. Okay, now, the name Puah, which is the other name that's given, the two midwives, Shifra and Puah. You know the name Shapiro, you've heard?
Mm-hmm.
What does Shapiro mean as a name? It means Shapir is beautiful. So the name, it also, you know the name Spiro and Spira and all of those types of names, which is similar to Shapiro, the same type of name. The name may come from a city called Spire in Germany, where those families came from. That may be one of the sources. But the other thing is that it is something which is beautiful. So it says Shifra and Puah, what Rashi says in the two names for the two midwives is that they make the child look beautiful. They comb their hair, and Puah is like poop, 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 poop. What is that? That's to calm the child down in speaking to the child and making, that's what Rashi says over there, that's the two names that was given to them. There are the Medrash, when it says the name Puah is the younger one, that she would, it has to do with breath, like puah, puah, that when it comes to a child that is given respiration, let us call it. That's one thing. Another is it comes from the word to appear. That is, she appeared opposite Pharaoh and threatened him. Medrash says that God will pay him back for what he's doing to the Jewish people. And that she also appeared contrary to her father, who was the head of the Sanhedrin at the time. Now, here comes the Medrash that you were talking about, and that is, it says a man from the house of Levi went out and he married a woman from Levi, and the woman became pregnant, she had a child, and they hide him away, and the sister comes about. The sister is older than Moshe. Moshe is the third child. The two older children are Aaron and Miriam. So, what does it mean he went? The Torah is just telling us that, oh, there was this guy who got married to this woman a long time ago, and now they had another child. Now they had a child, but they have older children. So in the Medrash, one explains what happened over here was they had been married before, and what takes place is that the decree has come to kill the male children, and so therefore they make a decision, that is, the father Amram, whose name, it doesn't matter here. In other words, we're not focusing on the individuals. We're focusing over here on Moshe. So there are no names given, because once you start mentioning names, then you start not just getting confused, you start explaining the names. This one means this, and this is this. And what we are interested over here is that Moshe, the child who's born, is going to be the one to redeem the Jewish people, and he has this miraculous thing that he ends up inside of the Pharaoh's house himself, and he learns how to be a leader of the people from there. That's all God's working over there, and that I need to focus on. I don't need, forgive me, mother and father over here. What I need to know and discuss is that. There's a sister, great, the father, great, mother, great, necessary also, and in order to go on here. So what happens, the Medrash says, that Amram, the father, who is a great leader of the Jewish people, together with others, decide that the husband and wife should separate and not have any children because the Baal children are going to be killed. And so this little girl comes over and she says to her father, "You're worse than Pharaoh." Why? Because Pharaoh made his decree only on the male children, and you are making a decree both male and female. There won't be any children at all. At least Pharaoh says the girls can live. According to you, the girls can't live. Number two, when Pharaoh says something, we don't know if it's going to happen or not, if people are going to follow or not. And look what you're doing. What you're doing is going to take place over here. And he therefore listens to her and says, "Okay, I will follow what you say." By the way, what do we know about Miriam from before? The Torah tells us, describing the two women, that they feared God. And they didn't do what the Pharaoh said. Okay? And now what happens, they go around collecting the children, and the father says to the daughter, "Okay, it's your fault." Mm-hmm. So the pasuk, the verse says, the daughter, the sister stood from a distance, to know what would take place over there. And the Mechilta, one of the Midrashim, says that this word vatesatzav, that she stood there, is not the same word as omeid. There are two words in Hebrew for omeid, for being there. One is omeid, to stand, and the other is like nitzav. This is not a great example, but a monument is called a matseva. That's the term for it. In other words, it's something which is very strong over there in its position. So she stands there to see what happened with her prophecy that this child was going to be born. And therefore, the whole story comes afterwards as to what's going to take place. Now, the idea of Miriam is what? Is that she helped children be born. The Gemara says that the Jewish people were redeemed bishus in the merit of Nashim Tzidkanios, of the righteous women. What did the righteous women do in Egypt? Well, what did the men do in Egypt? Here they were enslaved. They came home from the back-breaking labor, and what did they want to do? Sit in front of the couch with a beer and fall asleep. Or the equivalent of just they were completely wiped out. So the Medrash says that at the time when the Mishkan was built and everyone donated various things to it, there was a laver, place for washing, a gigantic container of water right at the entrance to the Mishkan, and it says it was made bimaros hatsovos. Now, the translation of those words are a little bit difficult. The word tsovo, that's usually translated as burnished, and others translate it as maros, the mirrors of the standing around. That is what happened at the time they came to build this labor. So the women came and they brought their mirrors to be used for it. And Moshe said, I can't use mirrors. Mirrors are items of beauty. That has nothing to do with the Mishkan. And God says to Moshe, Medrash says, God said, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says to Moshe, Kabel, accept these, because these are more dear to me than anything else, because as a result of these, the Jewish women made tzivos rabos. That's the word for hosts. We call God the God of hosts. The Hebrew word is like tzvakos. I'm saying it with a K instead of an O. That they, the women, created the hosts in Egypt. What happened when the husbands came home so tired from their backbreaking work? What did the women do? They would bring them food and drink, and they would take the mirrors, and the women would look in the mirror and say, I look better than you. And then the men would look at the mirrors, and women would start speaking to the men, and they would become attracted to each other, and the women would become pregnant, give birth to children. And that's what assured the future of the Jewish people. And God says, I want these over here. This is in the entrance to the Mishkan because they are so dear to me. This type of belief of the future of the Jewish people, of saving the children, of having the children, of making sure that children would be born, this is what Miriam did for the Jewish people. And that is what water is. Water is the lifeblood of everything. Nothing can exist without water. So therefore, in the reward or the blessing to the Jewish people that comes as a result of Miriam is this water which follows them all the way throughout the wilderness. And Miriam speaks up for another woman. She speaks up for Tzipora. What happens? It says at the time when they were selecting leaders for the Jewish people, it says that they had to choose from the various tribes and everything like that. These people would receive some kind of prophecy, something like, by the way, those people are not recorded as prophecy. We don't have them listed because, again, it was not anything for the future. And Tzipora and Miriam are talking to each other. And Miriam says to Tzipora, boy, that's so beautiful, they're all going to get prophecy. And Tzipora says, that's not so good, because it's lousy for their wives. Because if they're going to be in the state of prophecy, they're going to separate from their wives. And Miriam says to Tzipora, what are you talking about? And she says, Moshe, from the time he started to get his prophecy, has separated himself from me. So therefore, she just goes to discuss it with Aaron, and she says, hey, we got to take care of our sister-in-law, because I'm going to say it in these terms, and I don't mean it negative. And she goes to Moshe, and she says, why are you so holy? God spoke to us also. And so why have you made yourself like this? And she gets a tzaras, and God says to her that Moshe is different from everyone else because I speak to him so-called face-to-face. In Hebrew, it's mouth-to-mouth. In English, it's face-to-face. And that explanation is, you, Miriam, and you, Aaron, when God speaks to you, you go to the mikveh first. And then you're in the state of purity to be able to receive this prophecy. Moshe is different because he is there at all times, and he also has a different level of prophecy that he can call upon me and I answer him. But the other prophets of all times, including Miriam, the other prophets don't, they can call, they say, God, talk to me, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen. With Moshe, that was the level of prophecy that Moshe had, like one person speaks to another, and therefore God comes to him all of the time, and therefore he is in this state. You and Aaron, it is only when you sufficiently prepare yourself. Again, I'm just adding this. The book that I'm using does not mention about this water part over here, but about going to the mikveh beforehand. When you are spiritually on a level that is appropriate, then God is able to speak to you. And it is, you understand over here that this information about Moshe was not known. Because it's, remember, what happens is God says to Miriam and to Aaron, hey, guys, lay off. They didn't know that beforehand. Mm-hmm. Had they known that before? So in other words, this concept of it happening comes to the Jewish people as a result of that. So if so, what is the prophecy of Miriam, the message of Miriam, the lesson of Miriam to the Jewish people? It is how Jewish people are able to rise to a higher level. That we're here in this physical world, but we're able to connect with the spiritual world. That we have this, call it this water, that is her symbol, that she has for the Jewish people, that was created in the time period of the transformation from the spiritual to the natural world. And that connection is the lesson of Miriam, the prophecy of Miriam, and it is given to us in the wilderness and in Egypt itself, to give heart constantly to the Jewish people and to prepare, as Miriam is the teacher of the women, how it is to come to God with song and praise as she leads them following the splitting of the Red Sea. So this is a little bit about Miriam.